I'm Adam Evans with the NIRS News. US presidential candidates Kamala Harris and Donald Trump have taken part in, at times, a fiery 90-minute debate hosted by America's ABC network in Pennsylvania. It's the first time the two have met as they face off in the debate in the race for the White House. Trump called Harris a radical left liberal, while Harris accused Donald Trump of potentially destroying the US economy if elected.
Donald Trump's plan would actually explode the deficit. 16 Nobel laureates have described his economic plan as something that would increase inflation and by the middle of next year would invite a recession. You just have to look at where we are and where we stand on the issues. And I'd invite you to know that Donald Trump actually has no plan for you because he is more interested in defending himself than he is in looking out for you.
The new Northern Territory Chief Minister has come under fire for moving the youth detention portfolio back into corrections. The Royal Commission into the Protection and Detention of Children in the Northern Territory in 2016 recommended that youth justice be moved to Territory Families portfolio. However, the new government has rejected that. Youth detention in the Northern Territory will again be under adult corrections. The Victorian Police Commissioner says protests in Melbourne CBD are showing disrespect to police and attendees of a weapons expo. Tens of thousands of anti-war protesters are attempting to prevent people from entering a Land Forces conference, which got underway this morning at the Melbourne Convention and Exhibition Centre. Police have used tear gas and protesters have lit several bins on fire. Police Minister Anthony Carbine says specialist officers have been brought in from regional Victoria and interstate to assist the local law enforcement. He has criticised the behaviour of protesters.
There's nothing but disrespect being shown from some protesters who want to behave like idiots, and police will deal with you. I want to take the opportunity to thank Victoria Police members who've come from around the state and around the suburbs to keep the community safe. There's always a few people who want to show disrespect and break the law, and police will deal with them.
The Federal Resources Minister says the government is seeking to improve the approval times for the mining sector. Madeline King has addressed industry representatives this morning at an event in Canberra for Minerals Week. She was asked about the timeframe for approvals of projects proposed by the mining sector. Ms. King says there is room for improvement.
I know there are frustrations at some levels about how long approvals can take. I note the World Bank puts us fourth in the international rankings on how we do run our approvals processes. But I admit, and I've said this often in public, we always can do better.
The Royal Commission into Defence and Veteran Suicide has made 122 recommendations, including mitigating the impact of relocating personnel and their families. The Royal Commission had found the need to provide more support to families needing to move, including housing, schooling and employment. Another recommendation speaks to the need for post-deployment supports, particularly after high-risk experiences. It also calls for a clear and consistent framework that addresses psychological aspects of reintegration. The Royal Commission has been running for 3 years, with the final report being released this week. We'll have more coming up next.
If you are an NDIS participant, there are some changes to NDIS laws you should know about. One is new lists that make it clearer to know what NDIS funds can and can't be used for. For more information about the changes, visit ndis.gov.au/info.
Program sponsor.
The National Indigenous Radio Service, the voices of our people.
To sport, and Australia's Paralympians have been welcomed home at Sydney Airport. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese was among the crowd.
18 gold medals, lots of silvers, lots of bronzes, but for all of these athletes, they've done their best, and we're so proud to have them representing Australia, and it's just exciting.
That's Prime Minister Anthony Albanese talking to the ABC. Australia finished 9th in the medal tally with a total of 63 medals. To stay up to date with the NIRS news, follow us on Instagram, like us on Facebook, or visit our website at nirs.org.au. And if you missed a bulletin, you can catch up on the Community Radio Plus app.
Did you know that drinking any alcohol while you're pregnant can harm your bub? It's hard to stop drinking, But if you choose to drink alcohol while you're pregnant, it can leave your bub with all sorts of problems that can last their whole life. Remember, pregnancy and grog don't mix. If you need to yarn about it, visit your local Apunipama Clinic and Wellbeing Centre. We're here to help. Our health and our bubba's health is in our hands.
Station sponsor.
This message is from Telstra. Do you use #100# to recharge your mobile phone? The number has now changed to 125100. To recharge, send a text with your voucher number or call to recharge with a debit card. That new number again is 125100. Please use 125100 to recharge your mobile phone or call our people on the First Nations Connect phone line on 1800 444 403.
Station sponsor.
Hey, Bill and Gunnan, welcome to Black Law Tribal Edition. Murumu, Ganyara and Yirralum here with you today. And we've just wrapped up an exciting few days in recent events, the Intertribal Foreign Affairs Council Forum 2024, which was a huge success. Starting off with the most senior elder on the Yidinji territory in the Gimo Wallaburra, Bumi Gimo Burra, who's also the Cultural Affairs Minister and Police Minister, as you know, and many others. They're travelling around the place from the Ma Nation, the Gundij Mara, which is down the Australian description around the Victoria area, through to the Gudankarareg up in the top. The islands there between Papua New Guinea and the Australian continent, and of course many others that made a long journey to the city of Gimoi for this wonderful occasion. And this is 10 years of hard slog work by the Yidinji government and the citizens or the nationals and the volunteers that come here every day, every week, show up at the office. And dedication is amazing, which is exactly why this government is moving forward. And Ganyara and Yirralum, I guess, what were the highlights for you, Ganyara, of the actual event?
Yeah, no, look good. I've actually talked myself hoarse, so sorry about that. You know, it was actually good to catch up with a whole big mob of the people around us from continental Australia. They were everywhere. There was a good crowd, but not only Australia. There was international actors as well. You know, those come in from overseas, from the UK, from the Caribbean, all those, you know, there was a lot of people coming, Korea, it was there everywhere. So it was a big thing. I think the word has got out that the old paradigm is finished, the new paradigm is here, and that the sovereignty issue won't go away anymore as we start to unite. And this is what they're all talking about. Unification of the Indigenous nations. Coming together to say to Australia in this little locality, say to Australia, this is not, what's going on is not right. We have to sort out that past, and then we've got to secure the future for everyone, including the Australians. You know, it's not only just the Aboriginal people, it's the Australians as well.
Yeah, very good. You know, I think everyone was quite pleased with it. Yirralum, the importance of this is going to be, in years to come, we'll see the fruition of it on a mass scale, I think.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, the incredible message that was throughout the whole event was that the approach used, because, you know, we had speakers, as Ganyara just said, that there were speakers from all over the world. And one of our speakers from Tobago, Trinidad, reinforced that, you know, the common thread and the common story that exists between so many Indigenous nations throughout the world, and also the common approach to resolution. You know, it's about inclusion. It's about working together. It's not about being on top of the pile. It's about how we can all get there together. And that message is loud and clear, and it's the only one that's going to work for all of us.
Yeah, what I did like was the cohesion that was there. Everyone knows or majority of people know the task at hand. That, you know, this is about tribes now setting up their paper houses or their governments, and that was a really big thing. Whereas the tribal law, we all know that the tribal law exists, but this is more about focusing on actually moving how to create something that's going to interact with the rest of the world. And that's your own digital ID, your digital currencies, and all those things, Ganyara, which is really an amazing journey, because you were there at the very beginning, well before I got involved with when all the elders at the Tableland met, and there were people from all over the place that said, we want to move forward and we're sick of being told what to do. We want self-determination and we want to move forward. And from there, the government's manifested today.
Oh, look, very much so. Look, the time of talking was over, going back, 12 or 13 years. Then it was, you know, no more talking, it's starting to do. Let's start doing things. That's when the rubber hit the road. And it's really, it's taken a long, hard slog. It really is. It's not something very simple. As Matt Quatrop outlines in his book, You Want to Break Free, we're not wanting to break free. We were never included. So how can we break free of something we weren't included in? Legally and on a legal basis, which is very important. So we have to go back to where we rightfully belong. And it's the doing of it, you know, to run a government as small as what we are or as big as what we are is a massive job. It's a massive undertaking, considering the colonial manifestation has all the resources, has seized illegally the resources of those people whose land they're built upon. So, yes, it's now doing, not talking. And that was clearly evident over the weekend, was that a lot of people are now starting to realise that's what they got to do. The talk fest is finished. Now it's the real action. And build your stuff, come back and start to unify, because as a unified force, it'll be unstoppable. And Australia will have to address the issue of how it claimed its so-called sovereignty here.
Yeah, what was one of your favourite parts of the event there, Yirrlim?
I think just the common thread that was shared by everybody. You know, it's easy to, you know, get caught up and run down the wrong path of just, you know, replicating what's already out there, and you can see that the intention is not just to repeat what's already been done, but do it in ways that align with the traditional elders and the wisdom that sits behind all the nations that were there. And I think that was one of the best bits of it.
Yeah, very exciting times. I think the technology side of things also was quite impressive. The Yidinji Nation launched its version of Zoom, for example, called Sitcom. I was mucking around with it yesterday, and it's really, really simple to use. Although we did have some connection issues with where we were with some of the guests that were in Washington and Switzerland and things like that, and as you mentioned, Trinidad and Tobago. But we got there, and that was the main thing that the message came through. Ganyara, when we're moving forward now, the ANU College of Law, Asmi Wood, who's going to be on this program, the same program, today's program, but a pre-recorded interview, is very, very impressed with what's happening. And I think he can see something that of the different tribal groups are setting up their political or legal entities, that is their governments or their governing councils, etc.
Oh, look, he's not stupid. He understands it. And yes, you know, he understands this is not a land council entity. This is not a PBC, you know, the body corporate where you stay within Australia and get nothing. So he was most impressed, most happy. And look, it was a big effort from him and his PA to come up to be part of this, to understand what's going on. You know, this is the inaugural event, first one ever, and I would say nearly on a global scale, because most people in the rest of the world are acting through the state-created identity. Our people are acting through their government-created identity, which is the Yidinji government, not the Australian government. We are in the sovereignty that wasn't ceded. We are in the sovereignty that was not extinguished. So he could see all that. He understands where we're going. This is why I got the feeling that he supported so much. That it wasn't some argument of land council thing, you know, where you go to a land council meeting and there's arguing and fighting and squabbling. There was none of that. There was none of that rot going on. Everyone appeared to be pulling in the same direction. So as you start to line up all your arrows in the right direction, you know, it's a bigger force to be reckoned with. And that's exactly what's going on. The days of division and argument are over for us.
Yeah, and I think, you know, sometimes that's healthy. I mean, you know, when we're talking about land councils and things like that, they perform a function and a role, fair enough. We're not saying that every land council is like that. But, I mean, you just have to look at the Australian Parliament when it comes to leadership, and they're acting like children there. So sometimes that translates down into the other areas of the Commonwealth of Australia, for example, and around the world. You see that it's quite normal. But I think you're right. Once people realise what is available, and you know, if they've made that choice to say no more, then you know this is a natural pathway. It's just reinvigorating the law that already exists here, right? But just modernising it by putting a digital face to it, or a paper face to their governance structure, and codifying their world. And that's what Yidinji is doing, and it's leading the world. I'm not saying that because we're involved. I'm saying that because other people are saying that. I mean, people like John Kiff, who, you know, he's the former senior finance sector expert at the International Monetary Fund, for example, Bank of Canada for 25 years. Like, this is something, someone who's got a bit of expertise and knowledge, talking about Yidinji currency, for example, and many others. This is really important about building it for the right reasons. We're not building a bank because, you know, we want private jets and gold bullion and no one else gets it any. This is because we really want to, at the instruction of the elders at the very beginning there, to be a father to the orphan, look after people. And, you know, like I said before, the homelessness situation in this city is getting out of control. So the Yidinji Nation wants to step up and provide remedy and solution to that. And because Australia is struggling, or the state of Queensland is struggling, and the Cairns City Council's got enough on their plate with other things. So I think that's a really important thing. I might bring you in here because you're obviously Social Services Minister, but this is where the focus and the attention is with our government, and I'm sure many of the other nations there want to do the same.
Absolutely, you know, and what's the use of having 20-year plans if things aren't right in the present? You know, it's no use worrying about going to the moon or any other planet in our solar system until we actually have all of our citizens being looked after, all the people in our nation. And that's all we can look after. But, you know, we can also set that example for all the other nations. And I think, you know, you talk about how great the event was. You know, I'd like to congratulate you and how well done it was that putting it together and all the volunteers that we had. And absolutely amazing. So, yeah, it was a really eye-opener, I think, for a lot of other nations.
It was fun to put together, but it made it easier because the right people were involved, and it just a lot, you know, when you got those cultural authorities like Bumi and others behind the scenes making it happen, you know, we organised that within 8 weeks. It's pretty special, but it's simple when you can, everyone wants it. So I think that's the key, and it's done in the right spirit. That's the main thing. Ginyara, one of the other things now is what's going to happen next year, and you know, what other things can we introduce to it? Many people had their own ideas of the observations and final speeches from the different nations, but what would you like to see happen at the next one?
I'd like to see the further development of the digital realm, you know, the currency, the identity, and that sort of stuff. Because when you look at the way Australia is structured, they've seized all the assets and resources of the Indigenous nations. So that really limits their ability to go and mint gold coinage. You know what I mean? They can't go and cut down a tree to make the paper note even. Everything is traded in Australian dollars. So out of that situation, the Indigenous nations have got nothing else to resort to but to go to digital, which is where the world will be in the not-too-distant future. We don't want to cut our trees down to make paper money, but how does the world trade and operate? How do we talk to each other? It's all in the digital divide now. It's out there. And it gives us this ability to do stuff that was never available to the old people, even up as early as 10 years ago. They were still limited and constrained by that Commonwealth of Australia. But now, with the upcoming technology, you know, satellite links, all this sort of stuff for communications, the government, the Commonwealth of Australia, can't police it. They can't shut it down. They can't regulate it. They can't control it. And the Aboriginal nations can now build on that to work together, to unify together. But I'd like to see them work together to try and sort out the past and secure the future for Australia. Australia's not our arch enemy. It's definitely not the arch enemy. It's here because of consequence of colonialism. It's the leftovers. But where do they go? Where's their homeland? What are we going to argue and fight over it? Or what do we learn to share and work on this place together? We've got to cooperate and consult in good faith. Australia's role has been outlined with the United Nations Declaration of Rights for Indigenous People. So is our role. Our role has been defined as to look after our domestic affairs. They can't force us to assimilate, but we can do our stuff. So I would like to see that further develop, the relationship with the Commonwealth of Australia, you know, so if they see us building our digital world and unifying together, then there might be a gentle push from that United Indigenous Nations to bring Australia to the table to talk about, okay, look, how are we going to work together?
Yeah, I'm excited, and I think some of the connections now can open more doors to cultural exchanges between nations. Even now the Gudang Kaurig have invited us to go up there, and obviously that's going to be exciting and to see how that works out. And they're very serious about that, as well as the other nations wanting to be involved in future events. You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today. Thanks to our friends at Bumba Bipra Media, 98.7 FM, and you're listening to the Yidinji Broadcast Service if you're on the Yidinji Territory. If you're listening elsewhere, it's via the National Indigenous Radio Service. Yirrlim, let's bring it back to next year's event. What were your hopes for the next one? I mean, given that this is relatively new, what do you think is some of the ideas that you like or that you heard about other people talking about?
Yeah, I think, you know, it was such a varied level of advancement in the sense of putting down their different nations' governments into place. And so you really do have to have a varied agenda, which is what we had this year. But I think a continuation of that is important, because you've got your likes of people who are still clarifying how this will work for them and what's the best way to go ahead. And because we shared so much of what has been already shared with the Yidinji Nation, like, as you said, our central bank digital currency, our digital ID, and so forth, all of these tools that we've got, there were still a lot of questions around that. So it was good to see a lot of those questions being asked and clarified. And I think that's going to continue. So, you know, the format that we did have was good, but I think because there were so many nations there this time, they will themselves be looking to move forward the treaty process, and that's something which I think will be great for the next one they'll be ready for.
Yes, one of the panellists that spoke on the day was His Excellency Mamaki Wawa from the Ma Nation, or the Gunduj Mara Nation. He joins us in the studio today. Mamaki, welcome, and thank you for making your journey, and to your two sisters as well, your representatives from your territory. What were the highlights of the forum for you think?
Ngāra Nuchun, thank you, brother. It was the highlights were just being in person. I think it was so wonderful to just meet in person and exchange the ideas and really carry the seat a bit. It just solidifies it, what the process is and what the undertaking is, I suppose, of each of the nations. For us, you know, like, things grow quickly in Gimoi. When you walk around on country, you can see things growing quickly, and you guys have done that. You're growing quickly and you're showing the way in some ways. And if I could take like a little bit of a metaphor, when you go down to Victoria, you see lots of bunya trees in the botanical gardens. So we've taken some seeds from the subtropics already, and they do grow well down there, and they can take some time, you know. And that's how I see this process. Like, for us, I'm one person who needs to encourage others. There was the great professor who had a yarn with us, the British fellow.
Matt Quartrip, yeah.
Thank you. Matt talked about the fire, the power and the passion, and needing also some brass nuts as well. But, you know, so you need a harness nets of people that are willing to actually roll up the sleeves and do some of the hard yards and have some of the tough conversations as well. And that is going to take time. And I really see the importance, I think, of having people in person. So whether, obviously, next year it'd be nice to bring a much bigger delegation from the south. And also, obviously, there's open avenues for us to invite you guys down as well.
Yeah, I think that's one of the key things there, Ganyara, is that exchange and open. The whole point about it, the forum was that, because predominantly it's a foreign affairs and trade event, it is there to create diplomatic relationships. Tribal law and relationships and song lines is not what we're talking about. We're talking about our government-to-government or nation-to-nation interaction. This is a really important thing to understand. And, you know, I think creating those ambassadorships and governments and foreign affairs offices to interact with the rest of the world is a really important part of telling the Yidinji story or telling the Gunajmari or Ma story or telling the Gudankararik story, for example. These are things that have the Europeans and others have had a head start in, you know, because, well, Yidinji didn't have an ambassador in Mercia, for example, in the UK. I'm not unaware of one. There could have been one. But, you know, I think it's modernising that now to make sure that the Yidinji voice is being heard all around the world and that we can share our voice and our ideas and concepts.
Yeah, look, it's united we stand and divided we fall. What's the good of having all the toys in your own basket when you see your fellow man walking around with nothing? So, you know, this is what it's all about. Maybe there's a possibility that we're not right on some stuff. Maybe there's some better brains out there that can contribute from somewhere else. You know, we're saying that we don't have all the answers. That's we're far from having the answers to everything. But we've got to start somewhere. We've got to do something. And hopefully we can set a path for people to lead, follow along. If we can lead the way for a bit, maybe someone will find a shortcut. Maybe they'll find a better solution to something, which will be really great because there are smarter people out there than us. You know, we're not the educated ones. We aren't the ones that have, you know, got all the magic power to do this stuff. We want input from everyone because what we do is to just try and help other people not fall into the holes that we fell into. And hopefully then they, you know, they can come up with us and we can put this united Indigenous front together to say to Australia, look, your days of bashing our people are over. Your days are finished. Let's now talk and cooperate and console in good faith, which is what it's all about. Something which has been lacking for so long here, a couple of hundred years roughly, you know, they were supposed to come out and just be friends, but they didn't. They wanted to take the place. Now they've taken over our house. We want to share it with them, but on our terms and conditions as well. You know, you've got to hear our voice. We're not going to just roll over and play dead anymore. It's over. So if we can have this United Indigenous Nations, you know, you in. Of course, we're in. We want the other nations to be in as well with us and stand alongside us as our equals, not as being superior or inferior. Everyone is equal. And this is the role of the foreign affairs ministers.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing. The irony of that is the UN nation was represented there because it is an actual nation down south of Wollongong, which is where Peter Dhurrawal drove up from to be at this actual event. And, you know, we appreciate that as well. Mamaki, I'm just thinking about some of the things and that you'd like to see at the next one or something that stuck with you from this particular couple of days. Is there an importance or an urge for you to go back to your mob and set up this paper trail of government or what do you see as your priority from now?
I think we're very much at the start of this. We saw 13 tribes come together over the weekend, and there's another 300, well, of 300 plus tribes across the continent. So, I mean, I see a lot of importance around. I think I can see merit in creating podcasts and ways to share information, storytelling, writing books. I think so that the young ones can get it as well. This is what we're doing and why, and maybe, you know, playing with that a little bit, being creative, using our creative smarts because, you know, that's where we shine as well when we're playing and creating, you know, and not just sitting in desks and so on, you know, and doing that hard work, but someone's got to do that. For me, it's understanding that process clearly, like you were saying before, and stressing that tribal business is tribal business, and the tribes can then set up an arm of governance that is seeking to, yeah, make some remedy, provide some remedy to God's creation and the law, the original law, which is held by the tribes and held by the spirit in the LORE side of the tribal council. But in that, it talks about, you know, looking after each other and looking after country. And so there's responsibility there from the tribes. And so the tribes can use instruments of law, LAW, and create a presence that can be seen by the world and can be seen by United Nations and other tribal nations, and use other systems that are already in place, be that the carriageways that are now covered with blue metal, to exchange whatever we need to exchange, you know, whether that's in terms of making commerce and all these other functions, I guess, of a government that's looking after the old people, it's looking after the young people with the education, it's food sovereignty, you know, caring for country, whether it's the topsoil, the oceans, obviously. So yeah, there's a big education process, I think, just to say, guess what, we can do this. Then there's another way we can do this. We don't have to keep fighting up into and have them come, you know, with the native title holders, for example, and all the developments that occur on country, be that gas exploration or seismic testing like's happening down on the Great Ocean Road at the moment, in Bass Strait and all of that. It's like, hang on. The tribes have responsibility to look after those waterways so that the whales, the kuntable, and all the fish and all of those species also have access to God's creation to flourish. We don't see that happening in the Australian realm. We see that getting depleted, and we see lots of... But I don't really want to point out what's wrong, because it's not about that. This is about remedy and about moving in the right spirit and the spirit of trust and faith and love and sharing and caring for one another and caring for country. And I think that's why this has been such a beautiful experience for me and for all of us that have had the pleasure and... of being invited onto Yidinji country.
You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today. We're recording our show here in the city of Gimoy, and we'll be back after the break.
Jakey Long here in Cairns. Listen to your deadly radio station, BBM 98.7 FM.
Yeah, welcome back to the show. We're going to go to an interview with Professor Azmi Wood, who was one of our special guests, actually, and a friend of the Yidinji Nation, absolutely, 100%. Last year, we travelled down to the College of Law at the ANU, where they observed an interaction of treaty making between the Birrikaba Nation and Yidinji, and his Professor Azmi Wood, with a recorded interview earlier. Azmi, thank you so much for joining us. And the Intertribal Foreign Affairs Council Forum has finished for this year, but I guess what were the highlights for you, and I guess how what do you hope for the future for next year's event?
Honourable Minister, thank you for inviting me to this program. Peace and blessings to your listeners. I think meeting as sovereign people, as communities, as countries, as nations, is a very powerful step in asserting our self-determination as self-determined people and showing the characteristics of a self-determined group, and inviting others to do that has been a very empowering thing. And seeing other nations follow Yidinji and Birrikaba in what you're doing has been really empowering.
In your experience and journey in the field of law, let's say, how historical, or has this happened before in your mind, something in this capacity at this level before, or is this something that is quite new for this continent in a modern day context?
I think it's unique in many ways. There have been other nations that have entered into treaty with each other, entered into treaty with colonizing entities. So, in that sense, in a theoretical sense, it's happened before, but in a practical sense, where you're not only asserting sovereignty, but performing sovereignty, which is really important in international law. And that persistent objection that is important in international law, that you object to how your people are being treated by the colonising entity by invoking things like the Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People, by invoking the decolonisation instruments of the United Nations is very powerful, and I don't think it has happened in a practical sense. I mean, people have written about it, I've written about it, as you know, and others have written about it. But this is a practical demonstration of how it works.
It is, and I think from our point of view, and we've always tried to take... because if we look after the Commonwealth of Australia, obviously we look after your office and everyone else's. I think it's a very gentle way that we approach it for doing it. We're here to fulfil the law, not to destroy it. I think that's a really important thing to remind everyone, is that the sovereignty of the Yuendji Nation, I can speak for, is here to protect all the businesses, all the people that currently reside on our territory. But that's something that's also unique in that I don't think we're seeking UN membership. But we're not interested in that. I mean, if Australia is doing it, it's already there. Our position is, well, how about you continue that? But let's have that formalised somehow in some sort of agreement.
I won't speak to the Yuendji position out of respect. You know, clearly it's you know, you have senior people speaking for your community. But speaking from an international legal perspective, the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People talks about not affecting the territorial integrity of this continent and how it's represented. So we are working well within... Sorry, I'm not Yuendji, but I like to consider myself an honorary member of your community, you know, as Yuendji, to work within the territorial integrity, still asserting your rights as self-determined people, asserting your rights as sovereign people, and again, performing self-determination and sovereignty, and objecting to those elements of colonization which are oppressive.
How do you theorise? I mean, people like yourselves and many others talk in this space in terms of the legal universe inside of Australia. How would you see that coming to fruition? Is it through some sort of a trusteeship or a formal agreement, like a treaty? How would you see this possibly happening in the future?
I think trusteeship has a very particular meaning under the United Nations, so I'll leave that term out of it because of its particular technical meaning. But I think communities, countries, nations, peoples, asserting who they are, what they are, and as you spoke in your opening address, talking about the Montevideo Convention and how, you know, Yuendji are performing the requirements under international law of the rights, your rights as a people, your rights to peoplehood, your rights to legal personality, your rights to a legal personality that is recognised everywhere, is, you know, re-establishes your connection with your past and with your ancestors. And it shows that colonisation is just a blip in the flux of time. It's something that has happened, but you are connecting back to who your people were. And the way you spoke about the particular areas within your own territory, about which side of the territory, which sides of the mountains, how you connect back to your history, is incredibly powerful. And it is a demonstration of your intimate knowledge of your territory and how you control that territory from the past, remembering the past and taking it into the future, because you talk not only about your grandparents and their connections, but you talk about your son and how he carries it forward. So that continuous link is an amazing link to the past and into the future.
I know that decolonisation may take place in the future, but I know the King of Australia, Charles, will be making a trip to this continent in October as such. Have you ever thought about how Australia might remove itself from, or finally, I wouldn't say decolonise, but take on a new shape where an opportunity may exist for Indigenous statehood and recognition? So maybe a form of a republic or something like this. I know that Greg Craven was the head of the Reformation of the Federation committee at one point there. I'm just wondering, how do you see Australia maybe changing shape in the future, where Indigenous statehood and recognition can, I wouldn't say coexist, but they're respected?
So I think it's important to look back into the history of the United Nations when countries like Britain joined, Australia, countries in the international sense joined the United Nations. The Russians, or the Soviet Union, asked for five votes rather than one because it said countries like Australia and New Zealand were not independent, but they were part of the British enterprise. So in return, countries like Soviet republics like Kazakhstan and Georgia and Ukraine, I think Soviet socialist republics, had a vote in the United Nations. So if you look at it from that point of view, those countries didn't see Australia as anything other than part of the British Empire. I think Anglo-Australians have been trying to assert their own identity by talking about republicanism and all of those sorts of things. But the reality is that the King of England is the king, though in the right of the Commonwealth, is the King of Australia. So I think this is an issue that they need to sort out between themselves. But for Indigenous people on this continent, I think it creates an opportunity of saying, well, you're trying to move away from the British, your mother country. It gives us an opportunity to watch what they do and creates perhaps a precedent and a model for how Indigenous people can also use similar language and similar approaches to assert Indigenous identity, Indigenous legal personality, Indigenous international legal personality, as happens within the Commonwealth and its relationship with its mother country.
Do you think it might be something similar to that of the Russian Federation? I know that there are other, let's say, even though they're sort of inside of the Federation, Karelia, and there's other smaller areas in the Federation that do have some sort of historical identity and society-based identity. Is that something you see may take shape here, or is it too difficult to deal with all the different mobs in one go?
I think historically there are differences between what the Russians as the inheritors of, you know, the legal personality of the Soviet Union in terms of the veto and things like that have done. But they do have multiple languages, multiple races, multiple peoples coexisting within the Russian Federation. I have written, I'm not sure if you've read that stuff, about how we can have what's called horizontal sovereignty, as spoken by His Honour Justice Jacobs in one of the cases in the past. So I think it's possible.
Yeah, and that's possible because I think the potential solutions to, to remedy the situation that we're in, even John Kiff from the former IMF expert saying that Yidinji's currency could be a complementary currency. I think that can interact with the international world, but not necessarily be subject to a lot of the complex laws and legislations and multilateral agreements that Australia is bound to, for example.
I don't understand economics. I heard what he said. He's worked in that realm for a long time, and he seemed to think that everything that was happening here was perfectly practical and perfectly lawful. I think, having a currency, as he spoke about, where was he from? Devon, did he say?
He was from a former IMF, International Monetary Fund.
Where he lived.
He's in Washington, Baltimore, Washington, USA.
Oh, sorry, not. Who was the other gentleman who spoke at the conference? And
Phantom.
From the Britain. Yeah. No, from Britain.
Gulladu Stonycroft.
Yes.
Yes.
And he talked about their local currency and how their local shire has created, local currency to promote local businesses. you know, a lot of small entities are doing this, and I don't see what Jidinji is doing is in specie different. I mean, the intention behind it is different about, you know, the history that you have. But in terms of its practical application, it seems to promote local trade and businesses more than anybody else. I don't know why anybody in Gimoi would oppose what you're doing, because what it does is bring business to this community, as they were doing in Britain and in other places, as he explained.
Yeah, so let's move on to, you know, obviously with the failed voice and the referendum and things like that, one of the... what do you... And I know it's difficult to predict things, but how do you see the coalition, for example, if they were to win government in the future, how would they... What are some of the conversations you think they may be having and how to address this matter? Because it's not going to go away, and even Labor having a go, it didn't work. What other options are there, you think?
I think the leader of the opposition promised to have a second referendum on the voice. Slightly different model, legislated voice rather than a constitutionally entrenched voice. Let's see what they do and whether they keep their word on that issue if they go through. I think many elders have spoken about the pluses and minuses of a voice. I think the Labour Party probably has burnt a lot of political capital, I guess, in running this issue. And, you know, 61-point-something% said no, which is a huge number of people. But 40% roughly said yes, which is also a large number of people. But in an election sense, this was a landslide no. And... I mean, many people are going to continue with similar kinds of things. It's very different to what Yidinji are doing. Yidinji are actually performing self-determination. It's not waiting for permission from anybody to do it. And I think that is what self-determination really means. We will determine what we will do. And if Yidinji people are saying this is what we're going to do, that is self-determination in practice. I think the voice is not... really self-determination in a sense that it's a pan-Aboriginal... It's always going to be a pan-Aboriginal organisation speaking for a lot of groups. It's self-determination maybe to some extent from that big picture point of view. But, I mean, there are 250-odd communities here. Self-determination, to my understanding, is more about individual communities being self-determined. And the way Yidinji are working with other self-determined communities, to me, fits more within the international meaning of self-determination in its meaning, in its international instruments, than perhaps the voice. There may be different expressions of the same thing, but to me, what Yidinji are doing seems a lot closer to the international meaning of the term.
Yeah, I think you could sort of look at the history of ATSIC and others where they were sort of, you know, and rightfully so, if it's created by the Constitution, then governments should be able to control those things. But even though it may not be the right thing from a moral point of view or ethical point of view, whatever, but even things like state-based treaties, you know, there's so much divided opinion amongst the academic world that, you know, it does... people are for it, people are against it, and, you know, you can do this, but ultimately it's still within the domestic realm, let's say, of the Australian legal universe, which is, you know, I think has its benefits and but obligations as well.
It has its benefits and it has its downsides as well. With a state-based treaty, only the state legislature can alter the terms of that treaty. The Indigenous people or the communities don't have that legislative power. So I think it is lopsided. But on the other hand, it gives people experience in dealing with these kinds of issues in the legislative realm. And I think what you're doing is, I think, perhaps more, in my understanding, a lot more advanced than what is happening in the treaty world. You have treaties with other Aboriginal communities that is performing self-determination and not waiting for what in effect is a colonial legislature to tell you what you can and can't do. You're doing what, you know, this is up to you, this is up to your people, and it's up to your people to tell you if they don't think that what you're doing is right. But you're speaking on behalf of people. I can see that your people are united. I can see that they're coming together and falling into this group because it is a democratic, it's a consultative process. I think you have really strong, wise leadership, which is a blessing to your community. You know who you are. You know what you want to do. You want to do the right thing. You don't want to cause any harm. You want prosperity and education for your people. Who can argue with that? I mean, isn't that what we all want for our children and our parents? You know?
Yeah, and I think that's stability and security, let's say, is something that I think the world would need and Australia would need. I think there's so much going on at the moment on a geopolitical level. There's a lot of uncertainty with economies and blocks and wars and things like that. I think from our point of view anyway, from a Yidinji point of view, it's really about how can we minimise and have a sort of frictionless transition or something where there is some sort of Australia can truly speak for on behalf of the Yidinji Nation at the international level, at the UN, for example, while we go about our business and they help us interact with the rest of the world. I think that's what the UNDRIP document is, really simple in outlining that, and I think that's where we're coming from.
Yeah, I mean, UNDRIP is a great start. It's the minimum rights that should accrue to Indigenous peoples. But I think, as His Honour Justice Brennan said, and you said in your speech, and was repeated by the Honourable Attorney, was that there is a recognition by the Commonwealth that it was Aboriginal resources, Aboriginal land, Aboriginal the Aboriginal continent that underwrote and continues to underwrite the prosperity of the Anglo-Australian system. And I think all you did was to invoke that and to ask them to continue to do what they're doing, but perhaps to treat people more fairly in terms of the sharing of resources. But you're doing it through law, you're doing it through discussion, you're doing it through diplomacy. Again, all this falls within the ambit of the Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People. It's a document that the Australian Commonwealth has endorsed. And yes, they haven't put it into domestic law, but this is something they should do. But all you're doing is to ask them to honour their word. And what's wrong with that?
Asmi, it's always wonderful to catch up with you. I think there's a real need, and maybe you can elaborate on this a little bit more, about I think nations who are interested in a philosophical exercise, looking at setting up their nations and their legal entities and all those things. And we touched on this last year with the Birrigubba at the ANU College of Law, treaty making and the process, because it can be quite an intense, protracted exercise in real life, because there are so many things to consider when you're doing treaties. For example, I didn't have time this particular event to talk about data sharing arrangements and things that are really important and modern immediate issues. That's where learned scribes and lawyers are really important, because they can then help define or create documents or suggest ways of quickly addressing those things and doing it in a win-win manner that everyone comprehends in those two parties.
These are complex things, and they're complex instruments, but I still like to go back to what you said in your welcoming address, and that is that we as Indigenous people, or sorry, you as the Yidinji Nation, sorry, I shouldn't have used the term we, you as the Yidinji Nation, are entering into treaties in good faith. You are entering with honour. You're entering with every intention of keeping your word. You're entering into these agreements. So the treatment, the treaties in that sense become fairly straightforward. You know, they don't have to have a whole lot of complex provisions dealing with fraud and all sorts of things. Maybe you need to have it in because no matter how well-intentioned you are, some people do act outside the law. But I think you have demonstrated, your nation has demonstrated in your dealings with my university, with, you know, and interactions that we've had going far back, that you're not afraid to admit when we've had misunderstandings. We've had no problems agreeing that, you know, there could have been a difference of opinion. These things, when that is the mindset, it's not difficult to address disagreement. So I think the basic approach that the indigenous communities with which Yidinji have dealt with, as we heard from the conference over the last 2 days, has been in the same spirit. It's a very different way of entering into agreements. Yes, you are people. Yes, you look at the treaty law of the Vienna Convention. But I see a fundamentally different moral and legal approach to dealing with each other. So I think in that sense, you do keep the treaties fairly simple. I mean, of course, you're going to deal with a lot of complex issues down the track. But when this fundamental mindset is there, this Aboriginal way that you talk about between people, then I think it's very different to the international way, which is largely based on interests rather than trust arrangements. They talk about trust building. You work with people who you trust. So yeah, it's a different approach. Yes, I see the similarities of a pan-Aboriginal approach to treaty and how you deal with different countries within this continent. But I also see a very different approach to how you and other communities and nations are working together for the benefit of your mutual benefit of your peoples. So congratulations. Thank you for holding this conference. It has been a wonderful experience. Thank you, Excellency.
Professor Esme Wood, it's always a pleasure, and we look forward to your contributions and everything else along this journey. It's a wonderful journey. Thank you for your leadership and to the ANU for its leadership. And I think there's a lot of work to do, and really we do this with the hope and the intention that that there will be settlement and securing the future for all on the tribal territories and the Commonwealth of Australia can enjoy that at international and even boast about it in the future. That's my hope anyway.
I hope that's going to be the case, and that we treat each other as people, that we deal with honour, that we care for all the people who are with us and going through this journey, and that it's fair for everybody and that everybody benefits.
And that was Professor Esme Wood, one of the speakers at the Intertribal Foreign Affairs Council Forum this year. I guess we've got some final comments, guys, starting with the Yirrkala. You know, bigger and better next year. And I think the ability to diversify panels and things like that.
Yeah, well, if it's the first time you're hearing about the Intertribal Forum that we had, ask, find out more about it. Yeah, definitely. We want to see as many people as we can there next year, and look forward to having you.
Ginyara, what was your...
Yeah, look, it is for everyone. I just like to say, back up Yirrkala there, it is for everyone, you know. It is all the people who are concerned about their past and their future and where we're going to go together, you know, to live on this continent without any more PBC native title conflict, you know. We don't need that stuff anymore. Those days are over. Now we're going to work as a united Indigenous nation.
Yeah, and you know, given that it was turn around in 8 weeks, I mean, we would love to have dances and all that kind of stuff. We just couldn't afford to. And our mob always get asked to dance for nothing, so we didn't want to press anyone with that. burden. But you never know. Mamaki, obviously, I hope you're coming back next year because we'd love to have you again.
Oh, thanks, Morimal. And thank you to your Dingy and to the Tribal Council and to the Elders, past, present. And for those that are coming in the future as well. And I know that whatever seeds we're holding today, we might not even sit under those shades. We don't know. We don't know what it might morph into too in a couple of hundred years or whatever. But I feel like we're at the start here, and it's a privilege to be part of. Like,